Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. And I am grateful you chose to be with me on this 29th day of March, 2020. We're going to look at the norm. Kind of a takeoff from yesterday's little program about all the things about old Gregory. And now we'll take a look at what the norm is. Before I begin, I want to thank all of my sponsors who make all this possible. If it were not for them, you would not be hearing my voice right now. I am humbly grateful. I truly am for their kindness, their support. You know how I feel, most of you. And if you're not a sponsor and you're listening to this radio program and you feel like you got something out of it or you're intrigued, I hope you will eventually become a sponsor. It is a very important thing. You get so many goodies for being a sponsor, as well as the message of the month, listening to my podcast, watching my video cast, reading my commentaries, and all of the discourses I did for TV over the years. They're all yours for free at the sound of one hand clapping. From the heart of the Tao, one of the beginning ones, I Gotcha, which we're showing right now. There's all sorts of wonderful TV programs that we did. I hope you go to the website at aspire.org and take a look at the TV programs that are there. They're wonderful. They're eternal. When I filmed these, I knew that I was going to be talking about relative things to spirituality, and that it would have to last for the rest of my life. So there is a lot there. It's all relative and relevant to your heart and to living a more conscious and beautiful life. So there you are. I hope that you will partake in becoming a sponsor. There's so many wonderful things there for you. And everything I do, believe it or not, I do for you. I really do. So what is the norm? What is normal? Well, I get emails. You have to understand, some of the emails I get, they'll have a kind of a meaty question, real meaty, right in the front of it, and then down to the bottom of it, then they ask a few more of personal questions and things. So I thought I'd just take some of the more personal questions, and people want to know where I'm coming from, my motive, and all of that. So let's take a gander, a look, and see what we can find out. First one comes from Bob. He does not tell me where he lives. And by the way, if you do ask a question, you don't want me to even mention your name or where you live. All you have to do is tell me, of course, and I will make you anonymous. I just want you to know that. Bob says, how can your quote-unquote practice change me? Not sure I really need to be changed, Bob. Bob, the practice that I offer is for very few people, okay? It really is. It's not something that the majority of people would look at and go, well, that's going to help me. I mean, how many people really perceive the idea that spiritual awakening is essential to the course of a person's lifetime? Not many, if any. Most people are looking for survival. They're hooked into their DNA. They're hooked deeply into their DNA. And then their genetics take over on how to fulfill that DNA, and that's the way it goes. It never changes. Most people just live for surviving. And you ask a very poignant question. How can the practice that I offer change you? And you're not sure that you even need the change. The practice is for those who, as Jesus said, do hunger and thirst after righteousness. Now, what he meant by that is a person who hungers and thirsts for the truth, for wanting to evolve, understanding why that is so deeply important. Now, how do I tell you how deeply important that is? Am I going to sit here and try to knock my head up against the wall to find a way to say to you the things that will motivate you? No, I'm not going to do that. And you wouldn't have it anyway. You wouldn't believe it anyway. There is nothing I can say to a person like you that would be relevant to the needs that you think you have, that you think you have. You have probably lived off kilter most of your life from your spiritual path, or from a spiritual path, an authentic one, not one you've conjured up through logic, reasoning, and philosophy. And you've probably missed the majority of your lifetime trying to survive, have a great time, and maybe hoard all the money you can before you die. And that's probably just the way it is. So I have learned so many things over my 49 years of being a teacher here that I don't buck this kind of system. This is the way people are. They're set in their ways. They like what they like. They're convinced they're right and all of that. So the practice, you ask me, how can your practice change me? Well, it wouldn't change you. But if you were hungering and thirsting, if you had been able to see the bigger picture of your life, if you were the kind of person that could see the sunrise and the sunset, the whole shamedal, the whole shooting match, if you could step back, and really observe and see what this world and this lifetime is all about, what the proportions of your life are in relationship to the authentic, if you could see how you live in your body, why you have the body you have, why you have the circumstances you have, why there is futility, total futility in a lot of the things that we do, think, say, the whole shamir. If you could understand that, if you could get that, if that were obvious to you and you had a level of intelligence that would allow you to understand the gravitas of all of that, then you would be here with me. But you probably don't. Evidently you don't. And that's okay. That's just the way it is for you in this lifetime. And people are in various stages of what I call spiritual futility. And people need spiritual futility. They live in spiritual futility. There are various levels to it. I could go into all the different little levels that we go through, the one where we think we're right, we don't care, we are absolute, we become absolute people. We never want to change this, that, or the other in us. There's lots of little and big things about us we don't want to deal with. Our emotions being one of them, because we have been trained by our emotions. We haven't trained them. They have trained us on how to think, what to think, when to think, and then the person we become. And you can't talk anybody out of it. People are imprinted by their emotionality, and they imprint it in their bodies. And that's where it stays. It doesn't go any deeper or any further. They just stay in their body. So you say you're not sure you need what I would offer in the form of a change. You're probably right. You probably don't think you need it. And if you did understand what you needed, you would be humbled. I don't think most people are in the modality of humility. You'd have to be a very humble person. Meek, as Jesus put it. Poor of spirit, as Jesus put it in the Beatitudes. You'd have to be that kind of person. And, you know, you could, Bob, go to the website at aspire.org, of course, and take a look at the Beatitudes that I did there. Their videos, TV programs, I think you will find them rather interesting. And then you look at those and say, this guy's full of crap. I don't want to do that, or that's too much. That gets in the way of my drinking, my partying. That gets in the way of my family. It gets in the way of a lot of things. I can't do that. You go to church on Sunday occasionally, or you know, as regularly as you can, and you only use God when you need him. And that's the mentality of the pedestrian person who looks at all of this, quote, quote, end quote, as I've been told, spiritual stuff, which is a slang for and a slur on the practice, when you need it. And that's probably, Bob, where you're at when you need it. There'll come a lifetime or two. You'll have what you need when you need it, and it will hit you when the time comes. It'll be all right. Everybody's got to go their own way, you know, in that regard. There's got to be a lot of futility, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of sorrow. And we're students of futility, basically. If you look at it, we're just students of futility. And if you can understand that, you have the stamina for it, and you want to continue on the way you are until something convinces you that it might be better to take another path, you'll stay on the one you're on. So, love the one you're with. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Who did that? Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, and Vanzetti, somebody like that. Anyway, there you are, Bob. Thanks for your beautiful question. Hope it helped. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next question. This comes from Ronald. He does not tell me where he lives. I'm supposed to call him Ron, he says here. Most of us, Greg, are normal. Why rock the boat with your practice unless something is wrong? Please answer, Ron. Most of us are normal? Ron, do you live in a cocoon? Or are you a millennial or a Gen X? I don't know how old you are. Normal? What is normal? I have no idea what you mean. There are various stages of people in various states of mind and emotion coming from their genetic patterns that they have adopted emotionally. These patterns become the way we think and the way we live and how we think and what we live. And this you call normal. I will agree with you on a couple of things. One, normal is hatred. Number two, normal is fear. Number three, normal is vengeful. Those three things. Those three things are the three things that most people latently live from. They have very little tolerance for compassion, love, forgiveness. They don't want any of that. They don't think they need it. I talk to people in hospice. I talk to people outside hospice. I talk to high school students. I'm telling you, most people just don't get it, don't think they need it. And when you talk to them about the things that are truly important, they ask why. Well, why should I do this? Or why should I not do that? Or why I can get away with this, I can get away with that. I've done this all my life, and this is the way it is, and my life's okay. People base their life on the contentment of their physicality, their human body. If the human body, the physicality of the human body is intact, it can eat, drink, and be merry, and thinks that happiness is what you either surround your body with or what you imbibe your body with as far as food and booze and drugs and alcohol and all the other stuff, then everything is fine. Everything is groovy Tuesday. Just wonderful. And if the body's not hurting, if the money is there to have a comfortable life, then you must be doing something right. And that's the way people think. So, Ron, I don't know what's normal for you, and most of us normal. I don't understand that. I really don't. I don't understand. Do you? What is normal? How do you measure that? What are the predicaments of normal? And if there is a norm, who sets the standard for that? I just don't know. So I can't say I agree with you, okay? I think we're all nutcases, actually. I think there's a lot of insanity. I have done counseling for 49 years, and there is a norm that I see in my counseling and in society. So I do agree there is a norm, and the norm is nuttiness, emotionality. People are highly emotional at very different levels at very different times. And they make decisions in their lifetime based on the norm of their own emotionality, the state of their own genetic body. And they think in those genetics, in that emotional body, they are setting the right course for a normal life, whatever normal life is. I have never wanted, personally, a normal life. I don't have a normal life, and I don't care to have one. I want an extraordinary experience from within. I seek that which lives within us all. It's an extraordinary thing. Honestly, it is. It's, you can't explain it to people. It's unconscionable to most people's ideals of right and wrong, good and bad inside. You live, whether you know it or not, in a spiritual, oceanic universe that is always offering to us a chance to awaken to it, to come to a place where the authentic happiness, which is a quality of consciousness, resides in you. But people are not interested in that. So you're saying that's all fine and dandy if you're normal. You don't need all of that. But if you're not normal, as you kind of intimate here, and something goes wrong, then you use whatever, religion, philosophy, a spiritual quote-unquote practice, whatever, to get your life back to normal. I don't know how old you are, Ron. I wish I did, but as you get older, your chemistry changes in your body. Your testosterone will go down, the dopamine will change, the serotonins will change, the synapses will start firing off in a different way than they used to. You'll start thinking a little differently. You'll feel exposed. You'll feel vulnerable. You'll feel like there's a lot that you might regret that you said, did, and done. And you won't have the courage to apologize, or you won't have the courage to have remorse. You will have regret. You will find a lot of things changing as you get older in your body, changing your psychology, and possibly changing your behavior. So this is all going to take care of itself within us all. So it isn't like you're doing anything wrong. You're doing what you need to do to have the teacher of futility come into your life and sit down with you in some manner or another and just break you over the coals. That's what why they depict hell in the Bible. It is when I ignore, excuse me, what is really going on within me for the sake of wanting to get my life back to normal, whatever that is. So, Ron, I wish you well in your normal. I really do. I don't know what's normal for you. I think it's an assumed thing to say that we're all normal. I think there are pockets of falling into the collective unconscious where everybody resides one way or another. And in these pockets, there's all sorts of beliefs and theories and ideas and ideals and all sorts of norms. And if that's the way you want to live your life, that's the way you want to live your life. and no one's going to get in the way of it. And I would say to you, you probably don't need anything I would ever offer you. You probably don't need it at all, or think you don't. But one day, in another realm, in another lifetime, in another experience, you'll find someone like me out there that will be willing, hopefully, to help you. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question. This is from Albert. He does not tell me where he lives. If you're right about what you teach, then we're all wrong about what we believe. How and why, Albert? Albert, I'm not right. I don't think in terms of right. I think in terms of authentic, real. I'm not interested in right. I'm interested in real. What is authentically real? And what is it that we all need to work on within ourselves that makes us authentic? Right is of little or no interest to me at all. When Jesus used the word righteousness, he was talking about the authentic, not right, not like we would use that term. So please understand that. So I'm not right. I'm just authentic. And I'm teaching the authentic to you, to my students, not to you, but to my students. Do they struggle with it? Oh, absolutely, because often what is authentic is inconvenient. Not in keeping with genetic dispositions and beliefs and theories. It has nothing to do with the ego, its vanity and pride, its vengeance. So when you start looking at the bigger picture of your life and you start understanding a little bit about what is important in your life, you won't be seeing things in the right, wrong, good, bad modality. You'll start seeing things in the cause and effect. You'll start realizing karma. You'll start understanding the gracefulness of life and the grace of life that pours over all of us, giving us a chance to really understand, recognize the beauty of this experience that we are in. And it is a beautiful experience. It doesn't make you wrong, doesn't make people wrong. Did Buddha make people wrong? He opened up the door to awakening. Did Jesus make people wrong? He talked about what they did as sinful, as painful, but wrong. He was just saying, you're going against the grain of life. You're going against the grain of love, which this universe is all about. This whole thing, Albert, is about love. It is about persevering beyond the ideals and ideas of right and wrong, good and bad. It is about coming to that sacred place inside you where giving and forgiving are the restitution of a life spent in ignorance and willfulness. I have had many, many people I have worked with who willfully did the things they did, said the things they said, acted the way they did, lived the way they did, knowingly, willfully, and then only had mere regret for what they've done. Not remorse, which would mean humility, change. No, only regret. They do it again and again and again. And most people I talk to, most of the students that I have worked with, all do that. They don't want to get involved. They want to do it alone. They think they don't need a teacher and they can do it alone because no one's there to call them on it when they're not. So they can just kind of muddle through their whatever it is they call their practice and think that they're okay. You're not okay. But see, that kind of futility is deeply necessary in the course of a lifetime. And so I say do it. Do it all until you can't do it anymore. And in one lifetime or another, you'll wake up and go, oh, I'm ready now. I'm finally ready. Thank you, Albert, for your question. It was a great one. Please forgive me. Namaste. Well, there you are. Another week. I hope it helped. I really do. I love your questions. Please feel free to write me, greg@aspire.org. That's greg@aspire, A-S-P-I-R-E.org, O-R-G. I'd love to hear from you. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and please forgive me. Namaste.